हरि ओम सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, so here. Okay. Okay, so Jaya Tirtha is referring to three stages of bhakti in ascending order. The Pakka Bhakti, or right devotion, means to acquire knowledge of God. So it means to acquire knowledge of God. So that's what he's saying. So it's Pakka because now it's not bhakti sukriti, it's actually ripened into bhakti, right? The devotional process. So that means your shravana and manana are the ways that you are elevating yourself. Right? That's your the main aspect. So we can see from what he was discussing on the previous page, he's putting freedom from worldly attachment and then devotion to God. So this would mean the devotion to God, study of the shastras, and reflection, manana. Right? These first four, that would be then your ripe bhakti. Then Paripaktva, bhakti, or riper devotion, the means of direct vision of the Lord. Jnana is the means. So now you know how to directly see the Lord. You understand how to see Him, everything. How it means you're just hearing about it. You're just getting to get adjusted with it, accustomed to it, know what everything's going on. And this means now you have the understanding of how to see God in everything, how to always be connected with the Lord. So the meditation becomes the means for applying that. So then that dhyana, so that brings it to the next one, nididhyasana. In other words, realization. So there's some maturity there. And then we have ati paripaktva bhakti, or mellow devotion, the spiritual joy of communion with God. Here the direct realization of the Lord, aparoksha jnana, right? Because paroksha means what you've heard from others, right? So that previous stage would be your paroksha, right? And then aparoksha means that without hearing, you're just experiencing it. Right? Does that make sense? As we said before, like when you sleep, then in the morning you can say, I slept well. But you only experienced it. You didn't perceive it. Yes. You understand? So now you come to the point, direct realization, where you're experiencing the Lord. You're not just seeing the Lord. You're actually experiencing. It's another level. Right? Because jnana means you're seeing the Lord, but now you're experiencing the Lord, is achieved, and the bhakta wins the absolute grace, atyarta prashad. Right? So you could also then take this to be first as kanista, second as madhyam, and third as uttam. Right? Does that make sense? Like that.
When we say to experience the Lord, means it is like rasa?
Yes. Yeah. The direct realization of the Lord. Right, so that means, the spiritual joy of communion with the Lord, where you're actually interacting. Right? Two major ingredients of bhakti, according to Madhva. Does that make sense? In other words, everybody talks about the same thing. All Vaishnavas will talk the same thing. There's, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, there's one opinion. Mm-hmm. Now it's just which aspects of that unlimited one opinion are being brought out for the particular situation. Because as we heard, is that Anantadev with his thousand mouths is going on chanting the Lord's glories. He's been doing this since eternity, and he'll be doing it for eternity. Right? So that means there's unlimited to talk about. So if one of the acharyas stays for only a certain amount of time and discusses about the Lord, that means he's taking a specific aspect. Right? That doesn't mean that what Ananta is saying, if you're not talking all that, it's not all the knowledge about the Lord. No, the detail is all, the principles are all there. And then you get into detail that is important for the situation. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Right? So then Ramanuja is picking one particular element of importance, Madhva is picking another, like this. It means, of course, there's overlap because they're talking the same thing. You know, just like we'll say, Kanista Madhyam Uttam. Like he'll say, Paka, Adi, Pari Paka, and Adi Paktva. Right?
He doesn't use that.
He doesn't seem to use that. So Paka meaning that the Bhakti Sukriti has become ripe, so now Shraddha is there, so you're practicing. Does that make sense? Yes? No? But because these are the same principles, you can also then take move them, right? It's the same formulas, so you can shift them up. Like we were discussing yesterday, you could take Paka, meaning the Madhyama, right? He's actually become there. Then Paripakta, the direct means of vision of the Lord, Dhyana, so that you could take that to the earlier stages of Bhava. Then the greater stage, then Paripaktva, the spiritual joy of communion, that's there. But then the direct realization is chief. Then that goes into the advanced stages of Bhava and Atyarta Prasad, the absolute grace and prema. Right? So you can move it however you like, however you discuss. But the principle is you have always these three levels. Right, so it's just a matter of jnana is the means. So the Madhyama is always meditating upon. That's why he's on the platform, jnana yoga. Right? So he has that knowledge and then that goes into jnana yoga. He starts to meditate. But jnana specifically is more there in bhava. Right? Does that make sense? So the same thing functions on either aspect, depending upon which aspect you want to bring out. It means that someone has taken up devotional service, that means his Sukriti has become mature, has become ripe, yes. Right? But then within that, you can say, well, then here it's ripe. So this is almost ripe, but then it's, you know, does that make sense? Yeah, so that's always, because you're going to get that. We have to be able to appreciate that. That's why it doesn't always work. So then this means that. No, it means, this means that applied here. But this can also mean that applied where you yes. shift it. You know, because the point is Krishna's energies are non-different. So that means you can explain an aspect of the creation as Krishna, and another aspect is the feminine, as energies. But you can take that feminine aspect, describe that as the masculine, and then there'll be another aspect that's supporting that's the feminine. Because everything is always expanding. So it's not just happening without something. It means that then each thing is developing. Right? So. Okay. Two major ingredients of bhakti according to Madhva. A. One, a profound awareness of the Lord's majesty, Mahatma Jnana, and an inborn magnetic attraction to the Lord, Sneha. Right? So they're bringing out these elements that we will talk about in advanced stages of prema. Sneha, this, that. But they're talking about that these are elements within the rasa itself, within prema itself, which it is. But they don't become manifest to the degree that you find in Golok. Mm-hmm. Right? Sneha means there is that magnetic, inborn magnetic attraction. Right? But they'll never, things like man, you know, the anger and other things like that. So there'll just be that little bit up from there, like that. It may be in the, I would expect, but let's see, in the Jiva Dharma, then we'll get into those elements like that, because it's a combination of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, so that means all the parts. Like now we're discussing last chapter we discussed the second part like that. I don't know that maybe it does all of them. No, the fourth part does. Yeah, no, I think it's just the later stages of the second part. So that's what's going on now. But it'll also get into Ujjvala Nilamani, where it'll get into a little bit more detail exactly according to the rasas how the things are applied. Right? Because right now it's a general discussion on just what is rasa. Right? What's that?
Mm-hmm. Why he picked those two? Like the awareness of Lord's majesty as well as his attraction.
Because the aspect of in Vaikuntha, then there's always going to be the that Aishwarya, you know, that opulence, that majesty. So that's just Vaikuntha. So that's there. And then that inborn magnetic attraction is because there's that love, you know. So that will make the difference between the flavors and all, like the Vaikuntha. It's just which aspect of prema is brought out, or which aspect of Aishwarya is brought out. You know what I'm saying? Because it's the Lord's quality, so there's so many aspects. So which one becomes more prominent will make that aspect of Vaikuntha. But it's still Vaikuntha because it's because of the majesty. Right? And it's just the servitude. Right? If you add the other rasas to it, so you have all five, then you'll get Dwarka. Right? Because then you can handle all these different things at once. But in Vaikuntha, then it's just one thing. So generally, everybody would be doing that. If somebody does something different, it's not necessarily well appreciated. You know, not that, you know, it's bad, it's just that they don't know what to do with it. You know, as we see when Gopakumar goes to Vaikuntha, then it's a problem because they can't accommodate these others. But in Dwarka, they can accommodate more. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Conflict between jnana and bhakti as the ultimate means of moksha, from Jayatirtha's Nyaya Shuddha. Okay. So here's bringing out as the yeah. Okay. In the Shastras, whenever it is stated that jnana is the means of moksha, it must be understood that bhakti is also conveyed by it through secondary significatory power of the word. Right? So he's pointing out that to get liberation, you can only do it actually through bhakti. It's the power of bhakti that gives liberation. Right? Now, we'll see whether he's describing liberation here as meaning entering into your relationship with the Lord, or he's simply just meaning the fact of getting out of the material entanglement. But the point is when he says that jnana here, he means that it has to be applied with bhakti. So in other words, the knowledge is applied with devotion. Right? Like that. So here he's giving his definition. So whenever they're saying jnana, because that's why it's very important, because it's unless you have their definitions, because they define things in a very specific way, right, the mudras. So if you have their definition, then you know exactly that's what it means. Just like when mudra says that in the Vedic literatures, when the verses there, if it's glorifying Indra, it's actually glorifying Vishnu. But in that aspect of that he's the Lord of the universe, right? Or Vayu, meaning he's what's entered everything, is between everything. Or he is the guru. Does that make sense? Yama, he's the one who establishes Dharma. Religion comes from God. So he's saying it's not talking about demigods at all. It's talking about the Supreme Lord. So therefore, when they worship the demigods, it's not the demigod, it's the potency of the Lord and the qualities of the Lord that they're representing that you're worshiping. Does that make sense? So you never worship demigods, because that's just Vaishnavas don't do that. Right? But you're respecting that position that they're holding. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. This is because the intimate relationship which exists between them, insofar as jnana is the constituent factor of bhakti, which has been defined as a blend of knowledge of the Lord's majesty coupled with an absorbing love, sneha, for him. Right? So this is then where these two will come in. Okay. So when these two go together, in other words, you're having, it says, the profound awareness, so that will be knowledge, but then it will be coupled with that devotion towards the Lord. Right? So they see, they're conflicting, but at the same time, they work. So he's talking about not the knowledge of here, of knowledge based on logic. He's talking about the knowledge of actually the Lord and his quality, you know, name, form, quality, and pastimes. Right? The steps of spiritual discipline taught by Yoga Shastra, Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, are to be treated as accessories to Dhyana. Like, his meditation is there, these other ones are just so that you can meditate. Right? Otherwise, there's no other reason for them. Why sit there and, you know, push on your nose if you're not going to meditate? Right? I mean, it's something to do. You know, it's much more high class than picking it. So, you know, it has its, you know. Dhyana, which is virtually the same as the state of samadhi or introspection, right? So dhyana means the meditation. Samadhi means it's on something, you know, on the Lord, right? When that intensifies, it comes to samadhi, right? Because dharana is just that you can focus. Dhyana means then you're meditating on something, but that meditation should come to some kind of absorption, right? So that would be the samadhi. Yes.
What is the exact meaning of introspection?
Introspection just means, you know, looking within, trying to understand what things are happening. Right? Mean inner inspection, basically.
Yes. But usually it is looking about oneself.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but you are saying, self-realization means self in connection with the Lord. Right? Mm-hmm. It's just like when we have words, then that's what they mean to us. It means it always includes the Lord within it. Difficulty comes is when we discuss them not connected like that. You know, or because the word means a particular thing to us, so we don't see it that way. Then we'll get distracted or bewildered. Mm-hmm. Right? So the introspection means you're looking, but that inner view, but it's also the Lord's inside also. So then you're meditating upon the Lord and seeing yourself as servant of the Lord. Mm. Right, does that make sense?
I mean, to see the relationship.
Yes. Okay. Madhavacharya distinguishes carefully between dhyana and aparoksha. Because dhyana is the meditation, aparoksha is the experience. The former is defined as a continuous flow of meditate knowledge, while the latter is a direct vision of the Supreme Being in its bimba form. The form revealed in dhyana is therefore regarded as just a mental picture, an image constructed by the impressions of the mind, just a substitute, not the original form of God. But the one visualized in aparoksha is the actual revelation of God. Right? So in other words, he's saying one is put together by the mind, just like you can have a deity in a picture, or in stone, or in like this. So you're saying is within the mind means you're making the deity out of mind, right? It's the appropriate form. So it's still like, does that make sense? So he's saying is that aparoksha means you're actually directly seeing the Lord himself, like that. Not that there's any difference, but at the same time, you understand? It's the same, but at the same time, the experience is different. So it means Mother Yashoda is directly seeing the Lord. She's not dealing with the deity. But you see, is when Krishna is in Dwarka, and they take him to that Nava Vrindavan, they make a deity of Mother Yashoda and the other gopis. And so he sees it as non-different from her. Right? But they're worried is the deities may not move. So, you know, stuff like that. So therefore, you know, when he starts interacting, then Balaram comes over to distract him and say, hey, let's go, so he won't get too close. Hey, wait a minute.
This point here, is it the bhava state, this aparoksha, when you enter into the meditation?
Aparoksha means you're actually dealing in the transcendental platform, yes. Like that, but we have to see is how much he's breaking down. See, in other words, you can take bhava as one thing, but you can also then break bhava down into its stages. So it's just a matter of how much he's doing that. Okay. Just a substitute, not the original form. But he doesn't mean that means it's an idol. You know, just like the deity. Is because we're not able to appreciate transcendence, so the Lord comes in the deity form. So for the devotee, he appreciates this as the Lord. For the madhyama, he actually sees the Lord in his consciousness and moods in that. Right? But for the uttama, he sees it's non-different. Right? So there's not a difference there. You know, does that make sense? It's not a deity. So the difference we'll see is, here's the deity, I'm meditating on the deity. But then aparoksha means you're not meditating on the deity, this is directly the Lord. You don't see like that. Because the Lord and his deity are non-different, but we see the difference.
Yes.
Right? So he's saying when you don't see the difference anymore, then you're just experiencing the Lord. So that's aparoksha. Does that make sense? But it's just, problem is you don't have proper words for that. You know, in Sanskrit there's better words. You know, that's why the bimba and these things like that. But in English, you substitute, then we'll think, well, it's not actually, you know, but it is actually, but it's in the deity form. Does that make sense? So he's manifesting through the elements. So in this case, it happens to be mind, right? But if the mental image of the deity is appropriate, then it's made from mind. And so it is the Lord. So it doesn't matter. You know, the water pot is water. You can draw on the sand, you know, or on a yantra, you know, like this. So there's so many different ways that you can, bona fide ways to represent the Lord that and therefore he becomes, we're able to appreciate him there. This make sense? Yeah? Okay. The yogi or sadhaka is face to face with the object of his meditation and intuits the divine form, which is his archetype, bimba. Such direct perception of God is attainable only when the mind is specially attuned to the Supreme by full discipline of shravana, manana, and dhyana. Right? Because he's saying, using, instead of nididhyasana, he's saying dhyana, meditation. Well, generally when we say nididhyasana, we meaning that your realization is there, so therefore you value and apply it. Like we talked about jnana and vigyan, right? So for us, manana will mean jnana, and nididhyasana will be vigyan. So we're bringing out that aspect. Well, he's bringing out manana, meaning that you're applying the shravanam, right? Shravanam, and then nididhyasana is then you're absorbed in it. Does that make sense? So they're all the same: absorption, realization, value. Like, does that make sense? Tuned to the Supreme by full discipline of shravana, manana, and dhyana, in absolute self-surrendering devotion to God. Right. So that's being done in full self-surrender. It is He that must choose to reveal Himself, pleased by the hungering love of the soul. Right. So, in other words, we do what we can to please Him. Right. So for us, it's following the footsteps of the acharyas. That's the main thing. So he's saying the same thing, but putting the emphasis on following everything very nicely, doing everything in a very regimented, regulated way. Right? Because the whole point is Vaikuntha means it's all regulated, regimented, everything happens exactly on time, everything works like, you know, like clockwork there. Does that make sense? So in other words, the sadhya will come out in the sadhana. Right, so it means the sadhya, your goal, means the sadhana and the sadhaka. Those will be reflecting that aspect. Does that make sense? Right. So we see it's saying the same thing, just slightly different flavor. Right? Yes.
Right, also the Lord is independent, He can give it or not give His mercy.
Yes, yeah, that's why He's saying it's simply by His supreme will. There's no other way to get it. Right? But then that's done by following the process of bhakti.
Yes.
Right? Like that. Prayojana. Madhvacharya's theory of ananda taratmya, different levels of bliss in moksha, is a logical conclusion from the hypothesis of surupa beta, differences in nature, and taratmya, gradation among the souls. The main argument of this theory is that since moksha is only the discovery of enjoyment of one's own selfhood in its pristine purity and bliss, there is no possibility of exchanging one's experience of bliss with another's, or of its transference to another's, whether wholly or in part. Each soul rests fully satiated and immersed in the enjoyment of its surupananda, to saturation point, so to say. All souls could not have put forth the same quality or quantity of effort of the same intensity or duration. It thus stands to reason that there must be a proportionate difference in the nature of the reward reaped by them. This is another ground for taratmya, gradation of ananda, bliss and moksha. There are highly evolved souls like Brahma and other gods whose spiritual perfection must surely be greater than that of us mortals. The evidence of shastras tell us of superhuman sadhanas practiced by some of the gods and the wide difference in their quality, duration, etc., which are beyond human conception. Okay. So basically he's saying is as each soul is engaged in his sadhana to a different degree and to a different intensity, naturally the result of that will also be different. That's basically what that was saying. Like that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so he's saying like Brahma and others, you see that the austerities that they do or their great penances are so great, so they get different realizations and everything. He's basically just pointing out there's differences like that. But it's just like you can see here, someone works hard and gets so much, someone doesn't work very hard and they get less. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, that's basically, he's just saying you can see the differences here, so it would naturally apply there, being this is the, you know, reflection. Yeah, what's the importance of that has not been revealed, but yeah. Madhavacharya accepts an ascending order of mukti. Okay, Salokya, being same planet, Samipya is same opulence, Sarupya and Sayuja, in which each succeeding stage includes the joy of the preceding step. It should have been Sarshti. He says that as Sayuja carries with it an empty element of Sarupya also, it cannot be equal with Aikyam, or monistic liberation. Okay, so they're using Sayuja in a different way, which also has not been defined. Okay, it carries an element of Sarupya, because it means you are the person you're officiating in that. So here it must mean that Sayuja is that absorption in that mood, because you're saying that sneha is so much that there's that oneness of that. Mm-hmm. So here's the little key of how actually it's the same as what Ramanuja is talking about, or everyone's talking about. But somehow or another, it doesn't seem to have been caught. You know.
So now, in that case, Sayuja means oneness in desire.
Yeah, yes. That's how he's using it, because he's saying it carries an element of Sarupi also. It means the same form. So that means you have a spiritual form, he has a spiritual form, but that's the common mood in which you're interacting. But it doesn't seem to be brought out much. Right? So I guess he's bringing out the element that within the spiritual world, that there's all different levels of advancement or facilities or whatever you have, so that when you get to Vaikuntha you won't be upset that it's not all exactly all the same. Everybody has different relations, some are more close, some are less, this and that, depending upon their position. You know, it's like Garuda and Vishrakshana are going to be the closest. Any program goes on, they're always there. Right? So that means their austerity, their whatever they've done is so much greater. Does that make sense? But the point we'll bring out is that because you're there assisting in it, you actually experience the same thing. Yes. Like that. So it doesn't seem to, those aspects have been brought out. Okay.
This
yes.
principle works in Vaikuntha as well?
Sorry?
Principles of assistance works in Vaikuntha as well?
Yeah, yeah. Because Lakshmi is the main, and then Vishrakshana and Garuda are the next. You know, and so then you'll have your guru and your line and your group and like that. But there's no, as such, I can see as rivalry. You know, there's no need of that, because you're not trying to create, intensify. Means in reverence, you don't. It's by the greatness of it, the magnitude of it. You know, everyone working together, so that creates that volume. Is that a kind of, you know. So. But in Vrindavan, because you're dealing with the conjugal ras there and Parakya, then there's a need for rivalry, right? It means in the parakeya, I mean swakya, there's of course rivalry, but it's not a major element that brings out the process. You know, it may bring it out privately, but it can't be manifest in public because Rukmini is the main queen. That's it. 16,108, she is the head queen. That's all. And then of main queens, you can only have 8. All right? So it means Rukmini and the other 7. Then they're the prominent. Right? So the other 16,100 then are when they're alone with Krishna, then they're just as much wife as the any others are. But in the public thing, then they're the juniors to the 8, which are junior to the 1. Does that make sense? So you're always going to have, so there'll be no rivalry like this. Right? In private, there might be something. You might say, you know, Satyabhan might say, well, you got Rukmini something, why didn't you get me something? But that's private, you know, so it will be there in a small way to enhance. But in the Parakeya and Vrindavan, you have these groups because Krishna doesn't belong to anyone. Because if he belongs to someone, then it has the flavor of Swakya, though they're not married. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So the element that he doesn't belong to anybody, that enhances that. So even though Radharani, he only belongs to Radharani, but there's a mood created that even that he doesn't. So it's possible that the other gopis, by their arrangements, can get Krishna. Does that make sense? So it enhances the whole thing. So just you don't take it for granted that, you know, okay, yeah, the sun, you know, okay, just a few hours, we'll be out, and then we'll be there with the, but it may be Krishna's not there. So that's why then you have to make sure he's there. So then that's where the politics starts. Right? But it's not brought out too much because then that kind of politics here is very mundane. So you don't want to connect it because then anything that seems too ordinary here, then you won't take it as something special there. So it's not brought out that much. Because otherwise one might mistake it. So those things that obviously you can tell the difference between here and there, then that's talked about. You know, just that Krishna's dancing with 16,108 gopis. Okay, now that's, you never met anybody like that, you know. No one's been like that. Any stories you've heard about, you know, different, you know, men who are successful with women, you never hear about that successful. Right? It's just, it's not. This doesn't happen. Okay. Okay. Now we'll see if we're going to read this next section. Okay. Dvaita, it means I like the comparison, but I don't like the Dvaita verses like that, because there is no verses. You understand verses?
Yeah.
Yeah, it means against. Opposed to. No. Okay, let's see how it's been put together. Madhva is a rank dualist and does not believe in qualified absolutism. Though we see that at the very end, that's by using Sayujya as the top,
yes,
he actually does. But in preaching, he doesn't. So that's the point. So his disagreement is you don't use it in preaching because the Mayavadis will then think it's too close to monism, so they won't actually give up their monistic ideas. So in preaching, you just have to go in there and smash. You know? Does that make sense? But Ramanuja is giving this pleasant, sweet element that's there in there and bringing it down and making it accessible for others. You know, at a lower stage as a means of inspiration. Well, Mud was just taking, yeah, you know, like that here, you know, rank, you know, you see, we're out there, you know, we're Mudwas, you know, we're duelists, you know, see on the card, you know, like that, you know, like that. So then it gives that kind of a flavor.
Maharaj, when it is a question of preaching, the main thing is about tattva, or the truth.
It means in preaching, it's just how you go, just like we see Vishwanath and Baladev. They're talking the same things. They're in the same, given the same kind of position of respect. But one is talking about that accessibility of it, and one is talking about the exclusiveness of it, bhakti. Because bhakti is accessible to anything, everybody, but it is exclusive that it's only by the Lord's grace. And there is a particular standard that you can actually call it bhakti. Right? Does that make sense? So it's just two different approaches to the same thing.
But like in Madhacharya, in his Prayojana, there is no mention really about the goal of life is to love Krishna.
That he's already said before, is because that's what he brought out before here, is what you're meditating on here. Mm-hmm. An inborn magnetic attraction to the Lord, sneha.
Yes.
So he's taking that aspect of it, that he's bringing all the way down. You know, that you respect the Lord, you have that knowledge and that inborn attraction too. So he's bringing that part down. But he's not bringing down the part of that oneness of mood, which Ramanuja is. Mm-hmm. Right? But the one indicates the other. It's just which aspect you're talking about. You know what I'm saying? Like you have this rock. Someone can talk about the smoothness. Someone can talk about the unique shape or the color. You know, or about the different kinds of minerals that are inside, like that. So, you know, depending upon what you're into, it means the gardener's looking at, well, that would look nice, the shape or the color, or someone's doing some art thing, then they'll look at one thing. Now, if someone is in one of these rock sciences, you know, then he'll be looking at, you know, what are the different chemicals inside, how it was created, you know, where this would be from, so this would be from this place, you know, all that kind of stuff. But it's the same rock. So what we're saying is the acharyas are talking about the same unlimited Lord. They're just bringing out different aspects of it. It's not that they actually disagree. So the point of presenting it as if they disagree is not actually real. They don't. Like sometimes amongst the Gaudiyas, they'll say, well, Vishwanath says one thing, and and Baladev says another, or Rupa says one thing, and this and that. But there's no disagreement. That we saw in Manu. Manu says, the Shastra, the authority, there is no disagreement. It's just talking about different aspects. We don't understand, so our intelligence, then we think is a disagreement. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. According to Ramanuja, differences have no separate existence and belong to identity, which they qualify. Right? It means that your difference has no separate existence. It means that one rock and another, it's not a separate existence. It's part of rocks. You know what I'm saying? So there's the oneness of rocks. Naturally, they're different. But the difference is within the category of rocks. Does that make sense? So he's looking at that, is that because he's trying to bring out that everything is connected to the Lord. Right? Everything's connected to the Lord, so therefore, technically, there is no differences, right? Like that, it's all the Lord's energy, and it's all and within there's that principle, the quality of it. Then there's all the forms that manifest it. Remember, he's bringing out that what we were discussing about the Brahman platform, is that there's the quality, and then there's the forms and activities that manifest the quality, right? So, like we're saying, strength is the quality. Then the form and the activity is this column, right? Does that make sense? You know, or let's say another thing is like, so you saw over there the other day, there's one of those big, huge tractor things, you know, that move dirt. So that's a manifestation of strength, but it's taking a different shape than this column. It's made out of different elements, right? It's applied differently, but it's still manifesting strength. Does that make sense? So, in other words, the element of the difference of strength is secondary to the primary element of the quality. In other words, he's saying Krishna is primary and his energy is secondary. So it's the energy is non-different from the Lord. It's not that it stands on its own. He's trying to bring that out. Like that? Well, Madhva's trying to bring out the element that the Lord and the energies are different. Because he's trying to establish that if you're seeing it here and it's going on, it's an energy. So that means it's different from the Lord. But, you know, does that make sense? But it's real because it's all the Lord and his energy. So we're jivas. We never become one with the Lord. He's taking that approach. Does that make sense? Because whichever way you take, someone can take the opposite. When you're discussing in logic, you say, oh, but if we're one, then we're one with the Lord. No, we're not. We're two. Right? So in other words, when someone brings up the, oh, well, then the oneness is that, then you have to say the opposite. No, it's two. And then when you say, no, but it's completely separate, that means we have no connection with the Lord. There's no, you know, we're so separate. No, no, there's that oneness in purpose. The oneness in mood, the qualities. Does that make sense? So that's always what you're dealing with. Does that make sense? Like you see sometimes we're discussing something in the class and it's going along and then a question will act and it's kind of like it slips off because it goes into one of those.
Yes.
It goes into to what is the, you know, either just worrying about the external or only worrying about the internal, but not seeing the external and internal are non-different, but different. That's why for us this is very easy. Like we don't see what's the big deal because we do both. Well, you know, when two is emphasized too much, we bring out the one. And when one is emphasized too much, we bring out the two. Because it's a balance, the both going on at the same time. Does that make sense? Oh, village gardening. You just burn everything.
Well, burn?
Yeah, yeah. That's how you do it.
Isn't it bad for the soil?
No, actually, it seems to be, at least for grass in that, it likes it. I don't know why. Grass, when you burn it, it pops up even more. It gets, I don't know, it's like it gets, you know, tickled or something. I mean, it's a quick fire, not a heavy fire, just a quick flash fire. But somehow or another wakes it up. So it's not that, that's the other point. If you really want to get rid of the glass, you just go in there and cut it, and it's so dense and all that, and it has nothing to grow off of, it'll stay small. But if you burn it, it just shoots up. Like, so after you, like you're growing grass in the field, after you cut it, then if you burn it, then the next grass will come up very quickly. But here, it's just, it seems like less work. But you burn it, and then still all the big sticks are still sticking up. And so now, not only means you have less stuff there, but instead of looking like kind of like a little overgrown grass, now it looks ugly. You know, but you know, so some signs that.
At least they're worried about
huh?
What it looks like.
Yeah, that's why I said village gardening. Okay. Okay. Identity, therefore, is the last word. Right? So, how you're identifying something. Because there's no difference between, so therefore you're identifying who's the Lord, who's the subservient. Does that make sense? But for Madhva, differences have separate existences and constitute the unique nature of things. Does that make sense? So we can see both are correct. All it is how they're approaching it for the particular, whatever's the purpose you are. Like you use the tool for what you want to get done. Right? Like that. They are not mere qualifications of identity. Right. So we're saying there's, it means of course there's a difference, but at the same time, it's the Lord and His energy are non-different. But in other words, that difference is the identity, but it's not a separate thing. Okay, two. Madhva rejects the relation of inseparability, apritoxity, and the distinctions between substance, dravya, and non-substance, adravya. Okay. So he's not dealing with that something is inseparable, there's the non-difference between something. Okay, between substance and non-substance. So he's just saying they're two separate things rather than the one is still based on the other. You know, it's like darkness is based on light, so you can't really separate them. If you have light, then you'll have darkness. Does that make sense? You'll always have. He explains the relationship of identity and difference by means of unique particulars, visesha, in the attributes of the substance. These attributes are also absolutely real. Hence, Madhva does not regard the universe of matter and souls as the body of God. They do not qualify God because they are substantive existence in themselves. Though God is the immanent ruler of the souls, and through the souls as well as matter depend on God, yet they are absolutely different from God and cannot form His body. So the element of what using of the universal form, how He's pervading everything, and that it's the material form of the Lord. Right? And so therefore, everything that's going on here is making up that universal form. So he's not applying that aspect. He's saying is that universal form is a very different. There's Vishnu, and you know, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and then there's everything that's created. And what's created has its own identity. Right? He's saying the material world has its complete identity. But it's dependent upon the Lord, so the Lord is pervading it. So that's how he puts the two together. Rather than this identity here is because of that non-difference. It's coming from the Lord, so it functions on the same patterns. Right? It's based on the Lord. And so in this way, him and his energies are non-different, but at the same time different. Right? So one is just bringing out that commonality there, but not so much that it goes into impersonal. And here, the difference is there, but not so much that you don't have, it becomes atheistic, that you don't have the connection with the Lord. Does that make sense? Well, for us, then we can deal with them both at once, because both of them are going on at the same time. Because if you understand both of the things, you get a more clear picture of the Lord and his independence and his glory. Does that make sense? The one is just very clear. Here's God, here's the creation and us. Right? So God is different from the creation. We're different from the creation. We're different from God. Right? So everything's different. That's the thing. It's dual. Everything's different. At the same time, it's God is pervading everything, and it's by his grace and everything that it all goes on. Right? So he's only taking it that far, just so that people don't get distracted. Because the other is also takes a little bit more fineness to catch. Does that make sense? Because you have so many terms that tend to be a little bit overlapping. There's a difference there, but the difference is one is subordinate, one's primary, one's secondary. That's where the difference is. But otherwise, it's the same thing. You know what I'm saying? Like husband and wife are a couple, right? But there's the primary and the secondary. Does that make sense? And depending upon how you look at it, it changes. In public, the husband's primary, the wife is secondary. In the house, she's primary and he's secondary. Does that make sense? Yeah.
It seems that also when we preach, and as a devotee develop his qualities and understanding of Krishna consciousness, then we bring different aspects.
Yes. So you keep it simple in the beginning.
Yeah.
It's just that Ramanuja's using points that take a little bit more subtlety to catch.
Yeah.
Well, while it appears that Madhva is saying that's too difficult for people to catch in general. Therefore, just keep it simple, keep it separate. You know, but we see it's ultimately when he gets the prayojana, only at that point when someone can handle that, then you see that oneness.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
In the second sloka of this chatur-loki, which is pointing out that it's only the perception that this world is separate from Krishna which makes it illusion.
Yes.
He says here, there's a distinctive existence in themselves.
Means, in other words, the material world is, it functions, it means, in other words, you're taking from the Om Purnam Adah Purnam Idam. Means everything coming from the Lord is complete in itself. But at the same time, it's still dependent upon the Lord. So he doesn't bring out the dependence on the Lord. He brings out it's complete and separate, but the Lord pervades it. Right? While Ramanuja will bring out that dependency upon the Lord. You understand? It's just a matter of which quality that you bring out. Does that make sense? So here you can see here's the Vishuddha Dvaita, that kind of oneness. Because we're not talking, no one, when we say oneness, we never mean the Maya body's oneness. So, in other words, you could say Vishuddha Dvaita, these are the Advaita aspects of Vaishnavism. And then he's bringing out the Dvaita aspect of Vaishnavism. And then Nimbarka, there's the Advaita aspects and the Advaita aspects, right? So he's showing that you can look at it this way or you can look at it this way, you know? And the other is saying, no, it's just this way, and he's saying, no, it's just that way. But the point, but Achinta Beta Beta Tattva is we can see them both at once, because that's what's uniqueness, is others can't see both of them at one time. That's why it becomes sometimes very hard to explain some of what we're doing. Because Dwait Advait will be easier. Because they say it's this or it's that. I can catch that. But it's this and that at the same time. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. Just like, let's say, the wife is upset with the husband. Okay? That you can understand. Or, you know, she's you know, caring about him and taking care of him. That you understand also. Right? Those are very clear. Now, someone may bring out the one aspect of how that difference, you know, how the husband and wife are different. You have to be very careful. They have their natures. You have this and that. Or you can bring out the aspect of the oneness and that caring and all this and that. But now, how do you explain this scenario? She's very upset with the man. She's not talking to him, but she's feeding him dinner.
Yes.
That's both of them functioning at once. That's where people can't understand. You know, so that's what our philosophy deals with. So in other words, that whole emotional, personal, interactive element, the intensity of it, that's what we deal with. Well, he's talking about the greatness of God, but that natural affection. Right. Does that make sense? Yes.
So then Mahaprabhu, he's a personification of his own philosophy, because he's Krishna in the mood of Radharani.
Yes. Because they're non-different, but they're different.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? That's the problem, is that to say it's this or it's that, you know, it's there. It's a problem. So you'll see Dwait works really good when it's dealing with Mayavad Advaita. But when it's dealing with Vaishnava Advaita, all it is just taking a different position. Because Ramanuja and Madhva aren't at the same place at the same time. Right? And there's not going to be a problem. That Hanuman is not going to have a problem with Lakshman. Is he?
No.
They get on fine. So this whole idea that there's a problem between them, that's a misinterpretation. Right? But that's what you're saying. The expansion of Lakshman as Ananta, his portion has come as Ramanuja. Like, is everyone in the Ramanuja line, they're all they're direct associates of the Lord. So Ramanuja is Ananta. Right? Means that Nila, he's the sword of the Lord. Right? You know, so each one is a different paraphernalia of the Lord. Someone's the conch, someone's the this, you know, so all this paraphernalia, they all come and preach. Like that. So that's that line, and the Sri line, they all come like that. You know, so he's not going to have any problem with that. But it's just that he's using, okay, you've tried this argument, that's not working, so now let's try this one method. Right? So that's why it's very important you see that. But the only way to reconcile it is through the Gaudiya. Right? Because because otherwise, okay, well, which one's right? They're both right. That's the far out thing. They're both right. But to be able to understand them both, it's hard enough to understand one, but so to understand them both are right, and not only they're both right, they're both right at the same time. Right? Okay.
So, without understanding the Chintabhidhara philosophy, the common people were forced to select one of these two.
Yeah. It means it's either you take a Chintabhidhara tattva or you take one of these four.
Yes.
But the point is the Chintabhidhara means all of them at once. Because there's special oneness, there's unique, you know, there's, what is it, and that purity of that oneness. So one is that Bhav is so pure, right, that love and everything. The other one is is the specialness of how they're one and how they interact. But it's just two different aspects of that oneness.
Yes.
And then that difference, that's also there, because if there's not a difference, how do you interact?
Yes.
Right? And then you have the oneness and you have that difference. But the oneness and difference are at the same time. You know? So it just means it can go to an intenser degree. That's the whole point. If you see, in other words, let's say, now let us take the oneness or difference. Okay, so if the wife is as pleasant, the husband can relate. Or, you know, he deals in these heavy aspects so he can relate when she's upset. Okay? You know, so then he can relate to that. But that to be able to relate that she's upset and interactive, then that means you have to actually know so much more. To be able to understand this, she's upset, she's not interacting, she's not talking, but she's feeding. So therefore, I don't go on just, okay, well, she's feeding me, so I just go on like how it is when she every time. No, it's because the two are at once. So I have to eat at the same time, balance it with she's not talking. Right? So in other words, that's the main thing. Now, if I can deal in such a way to get her to talk, but I have to find the exact point where you can do that. Because if you miss it, then the talking, the intensity of the talking will increase. And it might be she'll leave the pot on the table with the spoon and serve it yourself as she leaves. So it's very dangerous. But because it's so dangerous, that's what makes it more exciting. That's what makes it more full, right? You know what I'm saying? It means you can get out of your car. You know, okay, not so exciting. You can jump out of a plane at 10,000 feet. More exciting. So the more dangerous it is, the more the intensity. So that's all it is. It just makes it more and more fine. So that's what Braj is. It's the absolute, because the oneness is so great, but at the same time, the difference is brought out so much. You know, but the two are the same. The difference is brought out only to enhance the oneness. Does that make sense? You know, that oneness is only to enhance the difference. So they each nourish each other. It doesn't end in one or the other. Does that make sense? It's not that one is higher than the other. Because if they're not the same, then how is that loving exchange there? But if they're not different, how do they exchange that love? Does this make sense? So in other words, never get distracted by all this kind of wording that makes it look like they're opposed to each other. Or even that their techniques are opposed to each other. They're just two different techniques. You know. 3, Ramanuja advocates qualitative monism and qualitative pluralism of the souls. Right? The qualitative monism is that by quality they're one, and by quality the pluralism of the soul is that there's a plurality of souls. But they all have the same nature, meaning that they're all, what do you call it? You know, Satchitananda, and that way they're equal, the same, but each one is unique. So in other words, you have the qualitative monism of the oneness with God in quality, in mood, but then the unique difference of each soul. So what does that give rise to? What's it talking about? The variety of rasa with the Lord. So that's what he's bringing out. Right? But for someone who can't appreciate rasa in that, you just say there's two. Because otherwise then you just merge them together and say Hari Bol. Right? You know. Or you leave out the Hari part, I guess.
vocabulary that's used, it makes it philosophy seem quite inaccessible.
Yes, because the means, in other words, in these sections, it's going into your typical philosophical jargon. But even this has been really, because otherwise they get it, you know, it's like, what was it on that other, you know,
this is like fun size language. Mm-hmm. This one is like the fun size language, and then the other was more serious, was it?
Yeah, it means existence of order in nature and man, the teleological argument, right? So philosophers, that means something, you know. You know, because they already have. Oh, you mean the teleological? You know, so they already have it all down to. You know, it's just like if you ever talk to a psychologist, talk to this. Oh, you mean this? You know, they're talking. Oh, we put you in this box. And it says, oh, okay, you have that element of that box. So when you put this box, that means you're in this box. It's kind of like you can't even talk to them. You know, you're not talking to a person. You're talking to basically, a machine that just analyzes what different things are. You know.
Astrologer also
does. Yeah, yeah. It's just, oh, this planet, blah, blah, blah. That's all it does. You also that, this planet, that, 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 and I think there's a little, that, Vata, like this, yeah. Yeah, it's the same thing. I didn't think about that, but yeah, it's exactly the same. At least it's more pleasant because it's Vedic, but the psychologist. <ooh. laughs>
But it's not made like that for any particular reason. It's just,
and it's just the way they write. It means you've noticed it most in this section. It means Ramanuja, it's a little bit more accessible. He uses the Sanskrit terminology in that, and then trying to translate the Sanskrit terminology into English becomes difficult. So sometimes they use the philosophical wording, and sometimes not. But what I was saying is the Madhva stuff is always much more, because it's more simple. It's actually easier to apply the process of logic and stuff on it. So you can argue much easier because it's so simple. Like that. While Ramanuja, it has much more conceptual elements. So it's a little, it's not applied as much. Or if it's applied, it's very, very, very much, but it's still within more of that personal thing. Well, the other, he's just showing the differences in that. And so then the logic comes out more in flavor. Well, Ramanuja, it's not as prominent. And with us, then, it's so philosophical, but it's so pleasant and sweet that it just sounds nice, and you just keep on reading, and you don't even know what you read. So you don't even know that was like really, really high-end philosophy. You know, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Vishwanath, all of them, you know, when they deal, they just say it so sweetly, this really, really technical stuff, that if you tried to translate that into other philosophical systems, it would be very, very elaborate. Like that.
It's like when you're reading the Krishna book, it's so interweaved with the philosophy and this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't even notice it.
Yeah, it's so perfectly done. Like that, yeah. So that's what's special. That's what we mean by master. You know? Means of course, the Vaishnava Charya is a master in the thing, but they're dealing in a certain environment. Right? But nowadays, means you could even take regular philosophers, and they probably wouldn't be able to keep up with this. You know? So there would be a handful of people that can actually relate on this level, because they have no idea of what's beyond. They're just materialists. So they're just philosophers within materialism. So let alone the metaphysical, what's beyond, and let alone Vishnu, and then the whole... So they don't have any background. So you can only actually be this much when you're dealing in the Vedas. Right? Because then you have something. It's just they've interpreted this word this way, but you show them it can be interpreted that way because they have faith and authority. Once you show that it's actually a bona fide interpretation, there's every chance they might accept it. That's what you see when the acharyas are talking with these big scholars. It's just they're adjusting that hermeneutics, right? How they're interpreting the word. You're taking the word this. When we say gyan, we mean knowledge with that devotion. Because you have knowledge about something, you're always dealing with that because of your particular affection for it. Now, if I get into technical knowledge, let's say like there's a kid, and I'm talking about, you know, the bicycle, or you have the guy in his car. You can get into such technical things, and there's not a problem. They don't say it's technical. Why? Because there's affection. Right? But if it's in a subject in school that you don't have any affection for, then, you know, already the name of it's already too complicated. You can't even remember what it is. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point. So he's pointing out that gyan means with that affection. It's not a separate term. While the Mayavadis try to take it, you know, and the Buddhists, that knowledge is in its own and has no feelings, no affection, no nothing. That's why we say it's dry speculation. Because knowledge means with the application. The application means you only apply it because you're attracted to it, right? Prajumna means you're attracted to it. Aniruddha means you have something you want to gain from it. Then you're engaging in the activity with the knowledge of Shankarshan. Does that make sense? Then, because knowledge, if it's not applied, it's not real knowledge. So all he's doing is taking the one and putting it in the context of all the other four. Right? So it means half of the one, the knowledge side. He's saying that the application the need for it, the attraction to it, and actually the base knowledge that you have is all there in one. So you're going to apply it, right? But others are saying knowledge simply means sankarshan. Right? Does that make sense? That's all it is. But that's why the problem, because Prajumna is the Lord of the intelligence, right? But at the same time, is an application that's being done through intelligence. So we say that knowledge is there. So the chit potency is in the position of Abhideya. Right? So we put knowledge there. But knowledge of the field is sankarshan. Right? It's in sat. Right? What's the tattva of something? What's its existence? Right? Does that make sense? So the point is when it's in its existence form, that's one level of knowledge. But when the knowledge is applied, so in other words, he's saying that when we say knowledge, we mean the chit knowledge, not the sat knowledge. Right? It means the chit knowledge, because it's applied, already includes the sat knowledge. Because Vasudeva, when you apply, already includes sankarshan, prajumna, and aniruddha. Does this all make sense? Right? Okay, we also didn't get too distractingly philosophical. You kind of have the knit eyebrow look. So according to Anubhav, that means that there's not quite catching what happened.
I'm hearing a lot of nice words.
Yeah, yes, I'm saying you're hearing, but the thing is it registering?
Yeah, some, I'm catching a little bit, you know, but,
you got the
rock
level
of
common existence
to all. Oh, okay. Okay. Vasudeva includes the qualities of all four. And as we're saying, sankarshan is, what is it? Bala and jnana. Right? And then prajumna is virya and aishvarya. And aniruddha is Tejas and Shakti. So when they're applied in Abhideya, Vasudeva, he has all six of those qualities. Does that make sense? Bala will be strength, but knowledge is the actual understanding of all the different aspects that are there in the way of what it is, what it can do, and what is the method to connect those two. Right? Does that make sense? It means I know what it can do, but and so I know how to deal with it so that I can get that result that it can do. Right? So all that knowledge, that would be your jnana. The bala is that strength to do it. Virya will mean that desire to actually do it. Just because I have strength doesn't mean I want to use it. But virya means, you know, that confidence and this and that to get out and do it. Aishvarya means then you have the facility, the opulence to do it. Right, because everything that's done in Aniruddha or in Prayojana, once it's gained, it moves back to Prajumna. So that means every time something's accomplished, that means more Prajumna is more and more enhanced. So that Aishvarya is there, right? And Aniruddha is that you have Tejas and Shakti. So that means you have that energy, the actual energy that you're trying to gain, but you have the Tejas, you have the influence over it. Does that make sense? So in each one of them you see is that these are the qualities of the Lord, but the Lord and his consort are not separated. Did we get, is this, we don't remember all this stuff?
Oh, we remember.
Huh?
Yeah, I remember.
Okay. You don't? We talked about this for years.
That was before 2010. Tejas
meaning...
No, I mean this.
Oh, this, okay. I thought you said Tejas meaning the president of Delhi. No.
No, it's kind of in here.
It means there's a little bit here. That's what I brought out, and that's the connection here that we're making. This is that. But jnana and bala. So bala is the masculine, jnana is the feminine. Right? Virya is the masculine, aishwarya is the feminine. Right? Tejas is the masculine, shakti is the feminine. So even in the Lord, it's the two go together. You always have the masculine and the feminine. So then to perform the activity, then you need all that. You have to have the strength. You have to have that interest to do it, and you have to have the influence to do it. But you have to have knowledge to do it, you have to have the facilities to do it, and you have to have the energy to do it. Right? So all those six together, that's Abhideya. So that's why Vasudeva is the central feature, not Sankarshan. Though everything's expanding from Sankarshan, but actually Vasudeva is the central feature. That's why sometimes it says it's everything's expanding through Vasudeva, but when you get into the technical, it's Sankarshan expands, and then from there Vasudeva, Prajumna, and Adiruddha come out. But that doesn't mean he's actually the senior. Vasudeva's the senior. Just Baladeva arranges everything, and then when it's all arranged, then Krishna comes and takes part. Right? Because Balaram is the field. He's the dom. He's the paraphernalia. He's all that. And then Krishna comes and enjoys that.
That's the pastimes.
Yeah, that's the pastimes. So Abhideya is the pastimes itself. Sambandha means that attraction to Krishna. Prayojana means the attachment to Krishna. But Abhideya means the actual interaction, the actual pastimes. Does that make sense?
So Aniruddha is in the mind, and he is the prayojana.
Aniruddha is the mind, he's prayojana, he's the goal, he's what you're trying to obtain, that aspect. But it also then means the need, what you actually require. Right, that's the difference between desire and what it means. There's the things you don't always get what you want; you get what you need. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point: is that they're two different things. We take them as one thing. What I want is what I need, but no, what you want is not necessarily what you need. When want becomes need, then that's when you endeavor for it. Right. Because if it's not need, you won't. Because you want it doesn't mean you'll do it. When you need it, then you'll make the endeavor. That's why thinking, feeling, willing. You think about it, that means you desire it. But until you feel, until the need is there, I don't will, I don't act. So that's why the mind goes sambandha prayojana abhideya, right? It goes through those stages. Then that's the intellectual part. Then by applying it in Abhideya, then I actually get the prayojana. Right? But then that prayojana then goes, having gained, goes back to this part of the field. And now then looking at the field, then you want something from the field, and then it goes again.
What is that? That the snake, when he was interacting with, right? Came dog, and then snake. And he wanted
the mouse.
He wanted to take shelter of Guru, but he was like, now I have to watch for my children, and then they had children, and I have to take care of the house now as the dog and everything. Do you remember that story? Narada Muni say, you should come with me, And he says, my children, they've had children, and I must stay as the dog. And then he gets Narada Muni comes back, after some time, and then the dog, there's the dog, the dog's dead. And then he hears this snake in the grass, and he's like, there's the snake. And it's like, it's me, it's me. And he says, now are you ready? He says, no, I've got something else to watch here at the house like this. So Narada Muni goes over to the relatives, and he says, there's a snake over there, they all come and beat him. And he says, now are you ready? He says,
Okay, it's one way to do it.
He's created then, because that went from a want, then it became the need. Because I'm just trying to understand how put into that process you were saying.
Oh, need is your attachment.
Yeah.
Right? Need is your attachment. Because what you desire, you're not attached to. It'd be nice, it'd be interesting, it'd be fun. But what you're attached to, you have to have. So therefore became attached. But he's given up his sambandha jnana. He's not seeing that chain will just go on eternally. Mm-hmm. Right? Because the children have children, everything that you have will always have some problem with it. You know what I'm saying? Problem from relatives, problem from the neighbors, problem from the government, problem from the weather. There's always going to be a problem.
Like there's never a good time?
No, there's never a good time. It means, I think we discussed it before, there's no nice way to say goodbye to Maya. It just doesn't exist. You just have to leave. You just have to stop. you can't nicely say goodbye, because nice, oh, but what about this? So it's just, you just gotta, you know, that's it. So it's like, we're trying to engage all the needs and desires and all that, but at one point you just have to, okay, that's it. But it, that only that's it comes when you're ready for that's it. Because otherwise Maya will just keep bringing up again and again and again. So as long as you need to deal in that way, then one engages those things in the Lord's service. But as soon as one actually doesn't need, then better to stop, because otherwise she's so clever, she can cover you and then involve you again. So when you don't need and that knowledge is there that it's not required, that's your moment.
Before midlife crisis.
Means you've been cultivating that, so midlife like crisis is not a crisis. It's just now you get serious about, you know, sadhana and stuff. Otherwise,
not reinvent.
Yeah, you don't try to reinvent yourself. Yeah. Open a consultancy. Right? That's right. Otherwise, what do you do when you're 60? Okay. 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 Ramanuja advocates qualitative monism and qualitative pluralism of the souls, believing as he does that all souls are essentially alike. Right? But he's also mentioned pluralism of the soul. So they brought out the point is they're essentially alike, but they're different. But Madhva advocates both quantitative and qualitative pluralism of the souls. No two souls are alike. Each has, besides its individuality, its peculiarity also. So Ramanuja is bringing out the peculiarities there. Otherwise, why is there qualitative pluralism? But the point is it's on qualitative monism that he's bringing everybody together as servants of the Lord. Right? It means I don't know if you've ever seen. Have you ever seen a Sri Vaishnava festival or a Madhva festival?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Means there's millions of people all engaged in doing something for the deity.
Yeah.
But in the Madhva festivals, you don't have that big. There's something, but it's not like that. It's just kind of like something goes on. There's something there. The acharya is doing something for the deity, or something else is going on, and you're doing that, and a few people are involved. And so it doesn't include so many people, so it's not as big and grand. That's why we take that from Ramanuja. You know, the big festivals and all that, because because he's taking this qualitative element of all the souls are essentially the same. But they're different. I mean, each one's doing something different. But they're different. Their difference is so that they can all work together as that, doing that one nice thing for the Lord. So then you get a festival. Okay. Looks like the nerves have had enough. Okay. Yeah?
Is this related because Madhvacharya is, at least the presentation is, there are soul in goodness?
That means I personally wouldn't get into that, because I don't believe that Ramana Madhva himself was making that point, that that's the inherent nature of the soul. That's his followers are making that. Otherwise, why would we have no problem with Madhva, but have a problem with that group of followers?
Yes.
You know? Because it's felt they're not properly representing what the acharya is saying in that one. But they bring it so much to the front because it answers everything, right? Because if you have a mundane thing, you can connect everything back to it. You know? So it makes it easy. But the point is the other, it takes more explanation. So it just makes it easy. You know? Because then you have to explain karma and this and that, and why is it God? No, we're just saying they're like that. That's so, you know. You don't have to worry about, you know, God being involved and why there's bad in the world. These souls are just bad. That's the way they are, you know. You know? Just, yeah. Okay, so in other words, one brings out the commonality of the souls and that oneness with God and quality, while Madhva's bring out they're all different and they're all particular. Right? Besides individual, they're particular, you know, they got their particular uniqueness. While he's Ramanuja bringing out is the qualitative commonality of it, you know, but they're individuals, but they have that common ground. So in other words, one's bringing out where everybody's individual, and the other's bringing out the community aspect. Does that make sense? So one works for community, one works for just establishing, you know, that getting rid of illusion. Right? So one, you're transferring the illusion from material community to spiritual community. And the other ones, you're just getting rid of the concept of material. Does that make sense? You're not transferring the one to the other. You're just obliterating material thought, basically. You know? Which is one way to do it. You know?
All right. That will take more like a Jnana perspective, right?
Yes. So they'll come out much more in that kind of mood. Like the Ramanujas are very scholarly, but they're much more easily accessible in discussion. Well, the Madhvas, they're specifically trained to be able to argue the philosophy. So it's harder to interact. Means if there's a nice relationship with them with the person, it's not a problem. But otherwise, then it's just when it comes to discussing philosophy, it's just they have a particular mode that they do. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki Jai Nitai Gaur Vrindavanandi.
Wonderful experience, and as we'll be in the next class of tomorrow, we will be making a shot at our house. So
at
11:30.
At 11:30.
Another shot coming from the waters and.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sorry?
This is a lot of Sutra Maharaj.
This? Yeah. No, this is Purusha Traya Maharaj. Mm-hmm. That's why it doesn't have that same consistency. So it's for Sahota Maharaj, dealing with this intellectual level is not a problem for him. It'll be more consistent.
Yeah.
So I think for Purusha Traya it was new to him, because he used to come to Mayapur and discuss with Atma Tattva and like that about making this course. Like that. And so, you know, but for Sahota Maharaj, you know, Vedanta Sutra and 11th Canto were his favorite books to study. You know, so that's the level he could function at. So that's why it's not as consistent. He did better in Ramanuja, because there's so much available. Madhvas is more rare to get information, because for them, you don't need to preach. So they write their books, so there's not necessarily much in English. While the Ramanujas, then you have to understand, so things are in English and stuff like that. So it's so his stuff, how it's presentation, it's a Madhva presentation, how they would present it themselves, rather than presenting it how we would present it. And then it makes it more clear, because you have to translate from them into ours and then compare it, so it makes it more difficult. You know, but this was done, I think, back in the 90s. So it's It's been like 15 years or so. Maybe even more, because he was talking. He used to talk, I think, about the subject. So it might be he's been working on it for like 25 years or something. But I'm not sure.
And we did something with VHE.
Yeah, it was done with VHE.
Yesterday was reading some part of this work, on that thing, and he was putting more things. Yes, why is the connection?
Yeah, it's this crucial time.
Nice topic, but not easy.
Yeah, no. But it's consistent. It means the six systems, that was Sahotra Maharaj. That's why it's actually easier to understand those than it is to this, because it has that consistency. I somehow never didn't know he had done that. Otherwise, then I would ask him to do this. But I just thought it was something done. So I thought this was done, that other one wasn't done. I didn't know that Sahotra Maharaj had already did it. Okay.